Have you ever loved someone so much that you followed them around and talked endlessly about them to all your friends and family? That's how much we love rhododendron, a quirky and amazing genus of flowering plants with a deep human history and an incredible ecological legacy. Follow along on our adventures as we learn about the remarkable things that folks all around the world have done for the love of rhododendron. Episode 1, There Wasn't a Map. In this episode, we learn about the podcast production team, how random twists and turns in the road of life led them to discover their love of rhododendron, and their hopes for how this podcast can inspire and support others embarking on their own journey into the vast and uncharted territory that is genus rhododendron. For as D.H. Lawrence once wrote, "Love is the flower of life and blossoms unexpectedly and without law, and must be plucked where it is found and enjoyed for the brief hour of its duration."
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of the Rhododendron Podcast. Our hope is to use this time to talk about rhododendrons from all facets of its use and wonders, such as research, horticulture, and beyond. Today, we want to use this episode to introduce you to the hosts and creators of this podcast. We'll answer a few questions about how we got into rhododendrons, what we're currently doing with the plants, and why we are here with the American Rhododendron Society Next Generation Initiative. So let's kick it off. We'll go around and introduce ourselves. I'm Ryan Fuller, and I'm a graduate student at the University of Chicago.
And hello, I'm Christina Woodward. I'm very active in the American Rhododendron Society as district director of the Region 12 in Canada. And I'm also curator of a private rhododendron collection.
I'm Connor Ryan. I am the rhododendron collections manager at Holden Forests and Gardens. So I curate the rhododendron collection for a large public garden in the United States.
I'm Juliana Medeiros. I am a plant physiologist, and I also work at Holden Forests and Gardens right next door to Connor.
Thanks, everyone. So you can see we kind of have an all-star cast of people and people from a diverse background with rhododendron. So we hope that we can curate some really exciting stories for everyone, and hopefully we'll keep you coming back to this podcast in the future as we talk more about these plants. So today, as I mentioned, we wanted to just kind of answer a few questions and give you all an introduction to the hosts for this podcast. And so you'll become familiar with our voices and what our interests are, and that will kind of set the stage for future podcasts and the stories that we tell within that podcast. So to kick it off, I guess I'll go to Christina. And how, Christina, did you get into rhododendrons?
Well, I come from a background of gardeners. My experience has always been that my parents valued gardens above everything else. They were extraordinary horticulturalists, each in their own right. They loved nature. And so there were always flowers and vegetables and shrubs and very interesting things in our gardens. So that was my background. My father took gardening to another height. He jumped from a career in medicine to include amateur hybridizer of rhododendrons. And there's quite a history in how all that happened, which is another story. But he always tried to encourage me to take an interest, a very avid interest in his work and in rhododendrons. And apart from the beauty of the flower, which always captivated me by its photogenic qualities and just the extraordinary variety and the color and the shape of the flowers and the size of the flowers, all that was of great interest to me. But I wasn't interested beyond that, except maybe to help out occasionally. And I would help him plant other rhododendrons here and there. But that really was my only involvement with rhododendrons.
That's really fantastic that as a young person, you got to see your father's passion for rhododendron. What was it that really sparked your own interest, Christina?
With his untimely death in 1994, my mother and I were faced with what to do with 800 plants in that large property. Most of them were individual hybrids. There were still quite a few species on site. And these plants were of all sizes and stages of maturity and health. Now, my mother was well into her 80s, and so this was a steep learning curve for us, how to make friends with 800 rhododendrons and master at least the basics of appropriate care. Well, through some research and reliance on the extensive hybridizing notes that my father kept, and reaching out to other rhododendron growers and contacts that Joe Bruckner had worked with and with whom Mom was still in touch, we got our act together, as it were, and we made some determinations that we would make sure that my father's work did not go to waste. We also became engaged more with the American Rhododendron Society. In 1998, we attended the convention in Niagara, Canada. The Niagara chapter hosted the convention that year. And Mom was able to get in touch again with some of the people that my father had worked with. So it was a very useful opportunity for us to meet those old friends.
Wow, that sounds like a huge undertaking. How do you make friends with 800 rhododendrons? And on top of that, what were some of the challenges that you encountered?
One of the biggest hurdles that we faced was decoding the coding system that my father used to identify his plants and also locating them. It was a large property, close to 2 acres, and there was no map. So utilizing the tools in my chosen profession, which was as a health sciences librarian, we created a system to identify each plant, and I drew maps so that we would be able to locate them. So that was sort of the basics of being able to work with these plants, what they were, where they were, which of course led to more research because I was now interested to know, well, what was the parentage of some of these plants? And going through my father's notes, I was confronted by the enormity of the material that he had crafted, his notes, his stud books, the weather reports, the research and the reference material. He had a photographic record of every plant. There was correspondence. It was really enormous. But these items were all instrumental in helping us interpret what we needed to know, identifying each plant's parentage as well as we could. There were, of course, a lot of plants that lacked any label. They were quite mature. So there are a lot of plants on the property that are valuable, but we cannot be certain of their parentage. So I wound up, as any librarian would do, was I created extensive spreadsheets. This was a little bit before digital opportunities enabled records. So there were extensive spreadsheets on all the plants. And I also began to take an annual photographic record of each plant. So I've continued that to this day for no other reason than it gives me great pleasure to capture the beauty of these plants.
What a joy that it must have been to take on that project. Just on a personal level, what was the most surprising thing you discovered through the process of cataloging your father's work?
So now in my father's stud books, there were certain comments on the sides of the recordings of the plant's progress. He would write excellent or worth naming, remarkable, this should be registered, and so on. And so clearly there was much unfinished business in his work, and it soon became very evident to me that my job was to secure my father's legacy. We decided that we would salvage and take care of the plants as best we could. We would also propagate some of the hybrids and distribute them as wide an arena as possible. That resulted in some interesting opportunities. There's a park in Mississauga, Ontario, which my father had donated many of his plants, I think something like 1,300 plants when it was first created. It is now called the Bruckner Rhododendron Gardens. We decided to donate more plants to the dwindling collection in that park. So that took care of several hundred of the plants. We also donated notes and the stud books, a lot of correspondence to the American Rhododendron Society archives at the University of Virginia. And after 5 years' observation of many of his plants, we chose, with the help of several people in the American Rhododendron Society to guide us in this process, We registered 7 hybrids, which we felt had merit and should be added to the 19 already registered and named with the Royal Horticultural Society. So that was a big achievement. I was very happy to be able to accomplish that while my mother was still alive, because I think it demonstrated to her that the work that we had been engaged in had resulted in something tangible.
So what's happening now with Joe Bruckner's hybrids? Do you have any plans to continue the breeding and evaluation work that he started?
So at that point, we also resolved to distribute the hybrids, definitely not for profit. We did propagate various hybrids through Van Veen Nursery, and that was my first venture into propagating rhododendrons. And they actually, to date, have been my best batch. With this propagation, we were able to come together with the Niagara Region chapter, which I had joined, and which I found most beneficial in helping me understand the rhododendrons and how to care for them and what to do with them. This propagation venture led to the inspiration that suggested a test project with the Bruckner hybrids. In other words, making the cuttings, the rooted cuttings, available to the chapter membership, which has ultimately resulted in a 5-year cross-border project that evaluates the horticultural merit of over 100 individual Bruckner hybrids. And so that was another piece that was extremely interesting and gratifying for me, to be able to spread the Bruckner hybrids around. And what survived would be enjoyed, and what didn't survive, that was part of the study, part of the test.
It's a wonderful story, Christina. How has this work been received by the rhododendron community? And how do you see your dad's legacy living on for the next generation?
We had initially presented on the first phase of this test project in 2012 at the Asheville Conference, and it was really interesting. We took down quite a few test plants and made them available. They were bought up very quickly, which was interesting. And I think that goes to speak to the interest that rhododendron enthusiasts have in this plant. And it's an interest that I would hope that we can engage a younger demographic in. I know that working with younger people who are either studying or just attracted to rhododendrons, in my experience, they have been extremely sincere in their interest in this exotic and diverse species. But there are limits to their interest, partly because they don't have gardens. They don't have the possibility of having gardens in the near future. And so there are a lot of limitations in how to bring a younger demographic to the rhododendrons and vice versa. With this next generation project, my hope is that we can create opportunities through mentorship with ARS growers and specialists, where younger people can participate in growing and working with rhododendrons for enjoyment, for discovery, and possibly to preserve them from extinction. And so that is my story in brief of how I got into rhododendrons and how I'm staying in the rhododendron world.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Okay. And I guess I'll go to Connor next and ask a question about how you got into rhododendrons and your job right now.
Yeah, it's funny that Christina said that she has this long connection, because I have a shorter connection, I think. And it really, the reason I got interested in rhododendrons initially is because of work. I was always interested in plants. I remember growing up in coastal Mississippi and learning the plants in my parents' garden, and followed that to college and got a degree in horticulture, and then went to graduate school thinking I might want to do research. But after that, decided research wasn't really the thing for me, but I knew I always loved public gardens, and actually have like a very distinct memory of going to Longwood Garden in middle school, which is maybe the pinnacle of American horticulture in the United States, and just loving every single thing about it. And it's always been in the back of my head that I wanted to work at a public garden. And so after I finished graduate school, I was just impulsively checking the American Public Gardens Association job board, looking for jobs. And this job at Holden, which is this rhododendron collections manager job, just showed up. And I was like, well, I think I know a lot about plants. I don't know a lot about rhododendrons, but I'm going to throw my hat in the ring and see what happens. I ended up getting an interview and getting hired. And so I've been really taking a deep dive and working with rhododendrons 100% of my time for about 2 years now.
Yeah, it's really interesting how those types of stories happen to each one of us, and each person that we talk to is as hopefully the audience will start to catch on and see that not all of us were born walking into rhododendron forests. A lot of us kind of spontaneously came across the path of rhododendrons. So it's really neat. And Juliana, how about yourself? What got you inspired to work on and with rhododendrons?
So I guess I'm intermediate between Christina and Connor. I've been working in rhododendron for about 8 years. Similar to Connor, it was a decision that I made when I got the job at Holden. So Holden has a really long history of growing rhododendron. And when I came to Holden, they wanted me to work with the collections, and I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with the diversity in terms of the physiology that they have and their different traits. I fell in love with the fact that people love them. As a scientist, it certainly helps if you're studying a plant that people like, because it helps you, you know, find ways to motivate people that your research is important. So yeah, I just pick them up as an interesting study system. And it's been pretty stellar since then. It's gone in a way that I never could have predicted. So
yeah, I think something I picked up on there that you said is that people love these plants. It's like, it's really not that hard to sell people on these plants, or, you know, to get them to trigger something, an image in their mind about what these plants look like and the personal experiences they've had with the plants, where you don't always have that with other plant groups. I think, you know, it's like, you sometimes I have to go through great lengths to get people to know what plant I worked on for my master's degree before coming into rhododendrons. And that gets long-winded sometimes. And so I guess, I think out of all of us, I have the least experience with rhododendrons. So it always makes me excited. And I am very naive about the plants in general for how they grow in gardens and how people use them. But I myself, I'm a graduate student at the University of Chicago working on kind of the evolutionary history of a few sections of rhododendron. So I work pretty formally as a taxonomist in rhododendron, but I also am studying the genes and the genome of some of the alpine rhodies from South Central China, where they have their greatest diversity. So the most amount of species in South Central China near the Myanmar border. And I came to work on rhododendrons kind of by accident. I really wanted to work on calicordis, which is a Western lily species. And that didn't end up paving out for me. So all of my conversations from then on out, when I was trying to find a new study group for my dissertation, usually landed on rhododendron when I was talking with my advisor at the Field Museum here in Chicago. And so I said, now kind of like, what the heck, I'll start looking at papers. And I had heard of rhododendrons, but growing up in Western Colorado had never, ever seen one. So it's kind of hard to, you know, or at least if I saw one in a botanic garden, I didn't recognize it as, you know, something as special as they would come to be for me. And since then, you know, I've been to China and I've collected the plants and I've been given some great opportunities like this one to talk to people who are much more experienced with the plants and learn a lot about just how rich and diverse the history of rhododendron is around the world. So hopefully more of that will come out through our podcast here. For the next set of questions, and I guess I talked a little bit about mine, but Christina, what are you doing now with rhododendrons and with the people that are involved in rhododendron?
Well, as I gradually came to become more familiar with rhododendron as more than just a beautiful flower, which I always appreciated, it took me into various areas of other people's involvements. And one of these was the American Rhododendron Society through the Niagara Region chapter, which is very close to us here in, I live close to Toronto in Mississauga, Ontario. And so I was able to learn a lot from others' experiences. And so I was able to navigate through my father's collection in the garden a little bit easier. As a former librarian, I was able to determine that, first of all, what we had to do was to identify the plants, identify their location in the 1.5 acre property. And so that took a lot of learning as well, because you become familiar with the plants and then you investigate their parentage. And so that was sort of the initial baptism, as it were. of my introduction to rhododendrons. I was active in the Rhododendron Society in Niagara for quite a few years until I became active in the mother organization, the American Rhododendron Society. So what I'm doing now is I sit on the board of directors with the American Rhododendron Society as co-chair of the Test and Display Garden Committee, and also as chair of the Next Generation Program, which is the new program for the American Rhododendron Society. That keeps me quite busy, as you can imagine, in working with Juliana, who is really like co-chair for that committee, very active with us. We are trying to explore different avenues of how we can bring together the seasoned members of the American Rhododendron Society with a younger membership. Yeah, so that is a new venture. And I guess I should mention the third thing that I'm involved in is district director for the Niagara region. So that is technically what I'm doing in terms of committees or associations, but it's a constant learning process. It's a constant invitation to partner with other people towards moving rhododendrons into a wider field. So really that's what I'm doing at this stage.
Yeah, that's great. Organizing people in general is really important when you want to kick off initiatives such as a next generation, especially recruiting younger folks too can be challenging sometimes. So I'm glad that we have you and Juliana here to talk more about this in the future. And I guess that kind of leads naturally into, I think, Juliana talking about what she's doing with rhododendrons now and at her job. So Juliana?
Yeah, so for my research, I am basically using rhododendron as a model system to understand the evolution of biodiversity. So if you're familiar with rhododendrons, you know they are very diverse. They have different leaves, different flowers, they're from different climates. And that diversity is really a great, an experiment for me, because I can go and just look at all the different species and ask, how do the traits that they have help them live in the different climates where they're from? So that's my research program generally. And I often joke that I embarked on a 20-year experiment because understanding how traits evolve, especially I look at physiological traits, it's actually a lifetime's worth of work and many lifetimes. So that's what I'm doing research-wise. In terms of people organizing, I like that you mentioned that. I have been working with Christina to find ways to engage the next generation. And so this podcast is part of that. I also am one of the co-chairs of the Rhododendron Research Network, which is basically a collaboration between the American Rhododendron Society and an international group of researchers. And our goal is to basically help more people do rhododendron research and to get community members who might not necessarily be researchers to get them involved in learning about research that's taking place in rhododendron and in participating in research. And then also to start basically ramping up the number of people who are studying rhododendron, just finding new people and getting them involved. So that's me.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, I'm also part of the Rhododendron Research Network, which I think is really exciting. And it's, you know, we'll bring together a lot of researchers for the future too. And hopefully can generate some new interest amongst young people through that channel as well. Connor, what are you up to with your horticultural collection management?
Yeah, so at the core of my job at Holden Forest and Gardens is curating a rhododendron collection. And really, I think there's two components to that. One is this, it's kind of like stewarding this historical legacy. It seems like every region of the world has had people that just become fanatical about this group of plants. And that's certainly true of Northeast Ohio. And, you know, 100 years ago, there were just these old dudes that just got hooked on rhododendrons. And we have all of their plants in our collections at Holton Arboretum and the David G. Leitch Research Station, where I spend most of my time in the summer. And you know, you have all these cool plants that, you know, took decades to really make and trial and figure out which ones are good. And we're just trying to make sure they don't disappear. A huge chunk of that is at the David G. Leitch Research Station. It's in Ohio, it's a 50-year legacy of rhododendron breeding. The late David G. Leitch was just one of these old dudes that was just obsessed with rhododendrons and started breeding them, trying to develop really ornamental, really colorful and cold hardy rhododendrons for Northeast Ohio and this area. And so we have this huge collection of like 700 rhododendrons that were never given a name, but David liked them enough to keep them. And we have them in our garden. And so we maintain those and we try to further the breeding program, trying to make good garden rhododendrons for people. And then with the Holden Rhododendron Collection, it's going a step further and saying, we have this historical connection for garden plants, but what more can we do with rhododendrons? So it's trying to support people like Juliana, building a rhododendron collection that's really good for any kind of research. And then also things like conservation. Rhododendron's a huge group of plants all over the world. And when there's so many different species, there are certainly going to be some that are at risk of extinction. Actually, just last month, there was a new rhododendron described in the United States. Like of all places, they're still discovering new species. And you know, as soon as you discover it, it's like almost certainly it's going to be this rare thing or at least not well known. And so trying to get it into a garden collection so that at least it's preserved there. And then also trying to find opportunities to help conserve them in their natural habitats is the other component of my job. And so it's a lot and it's a lot of fun. And working with rhododendrons lets you be in beautiful places all the time. And so I love it.
Yeah, that's great. I like that you mentioned that there was a new species described kind of right under the nose of, you know, I guess what people would consider the pinnacle of Western science. you know, but it does sometimes take modern tools and, you know, people getting out there and talking to experts, I guess, that you wouldn't even think about talking to sometimes. Like you said, you know, it'd be like you talk to a fanatical rhododendron person, they'd be like, oh yeah, that plant right over there is a totally different species. So I'd be like, wait, what? Like, you know, some average Joe like me comes along and sequences some DNA and they're like, oh yeah, it's totally different, you know? So those are always really, really cool stories. And I think not always, you know, given as much press as they probably need to. Cause I think, you know, people even outside of rhododendron specialty probably would be really interested in knowing that there's a new plant that they could possibly see the next time they go on a hike or something like that, you know. So that's really cool, Connor. I wanted to have the next part of our podcast kind of open up to be more of a dialogue amongst the four of us to kind of talk a little bit about this rhododendron next generation and why we're all here, so we can kind of go around the room and talk to one another about why we're here and what we hope for the initiative itself and for how this podcast might be able to assist in some of that. I'll just randomly throw out Juliana to start us off for the why are you here and what are your hopes for the next generation?
So getting youth involved in science has always been a passion of mine. I was kind of a latecomer to science. I never was interested in science as a kid because I was never introduced to it. And so I've always had this thing for just trying to get anybody and everybody to just have fun doing science. And so I think in some ways that's at the heart of why I'm here, is that I want more people to enjoy the joy of rhododendron, enjoy the joy of studying it. And not only that, I feel really passionate about plants as a career option that has a lot of benefit for the planet Earth and the problems that we're facing. So for me, being involved in the Next Generation program of the American Rhododendron Society is really about matching youth up with opportunities that we have to offer. First of all, we have really dense community of experts. You guys alluded to the experts when Connor mentioned this new species. That's been a huge benefit for me as a scientist. When I came into ARS, And I basically saw people who had 1,000 dissertations worth of information. And that's a resource that the youth can use. That's a resource that people coming up, whether you're looking for a career or you're looking to contribute to things like conservation or anything like that, having a community of people who have all this experience is invaluable. And so I really saw a need to connect the youth that I work with as part of my job, and that is sort of my thing, with this community of rhododendron experts. And so Christina had actually come to a meeting that I hosted at Holden, and she just started talking about wanting to get youth involved. And I think I immediately like pledged my allegiance right there. I was like, I'm your person. I'm here. I'll whatever you need. Let's work together. So yeah, that's how it started.
Christina, can you shed any light on that interaction? What was that was like for you?
Well, actually, that was one of the highlights of the development of this new program, because here was someone who was really enthusiastic about the same things that I was enthusiastic about. And so that was really the start of getting into creating this new program. And I'll just take you back a little ways, because my excitement with this was with Niagara Park School of Horticulture. We had invited some students, this is now going back three or four years ago. And to our surprise, they were very happy to come to our chapter meetings, and they participated and they stayed with us for that whole semester. In fact, we're still in touch with some of those students. What appealed to me was that they were so interested in learning from what we knew as, you know, chapter members involved with this exotic plant. They were interested in developing their own rhododendron section in the Niagara Park's Botanical Garden, and they overhauled it. So that was really the start of my interest with the students. And what fired me up was that as a librarian, one of the things that I always felt was the most exciting piece in my job was you don't have to know the answer to a question, but you need to know where to guide people to find the answer. And so this is what I experienced with the students. They wanted to know, well, where could they get more? You know, where could they find people? Where could they find jobs? Where could they find associations? And so that's what the ARS, with its huge resources, is eminently able to do. And so here was a natural connection, you know. Yeah, so that's what started me off on developing this idea. And then Juliana came along and really added the important pieces to it. And so we're at the point where we are a committee of the ARS. It takes a fair bit of work. The other piece that keeps me in this is the test project that the Bruckner Rhododendrons, that's my father's collection, inspired.
And I guess, Connor, how did you get wrapped up in this? Were you a recruit for the next gen? Are we the wave of the next gen? Is that what?
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So Ryan and I are the, I guess, the next gen components of this podcast group. And so we get to work with great people like Christina and Juliana, who know so much about rhododendrons and are so willing to share what they know. And I think, you know, at the core of why I want to be involved with this is that I want people to care about what I care about, because these people are like my generation. As I get older, I want this generation to continue to have these same interests that I have as I get older, so that I will always have people to talk with and always have people to go places with to see these cool plants. And really just in general, a lot of it is just cultivating this, whatever. It's maybe, I guess, cliche to say cultivate when you're talking about plants, but it's so easy to do. Just creating this culture, really it would be a culture of people in the United States and abroad that just care about plants, really anything about them, but just so that they care. I mean, there's so many opportunities just in the hobby realm. I mean, one of my favorite things to do is to just pick a place, a garden or a natural area, and just go there on the weekend. And if we don't have people that care about these places, then they don't exist. And so if we can just create this group of people that as they get older are going to continue to care about these things, that works really well for me and works really well for the planet too, I think. And of course, outside of the hobby realm, Juliana mentioned career opportunities, but I mean, working with plants and rhododendrons, but plants in general, I mean, there's so many opportunities. I hear so many stories about people who work some kind of desk job or work in IT and they hate it. And so then they just pivot and try to find some way to work outside. And if you work with plants, I mean, there's no way that you can't work outside at least a little, even if you're like someone who works in a lab, you have to go collect samples. And so you got to go outside and see the plants and get some sunshine. And I really love that about plants and rhododendrons, and just having a group of people to do that with would be really great.
Yeah, I echo that sentiment that I think if you're looking to get away from a desk job, then studying plants is a good way to do it. Although I don't know if doing a dissertation is the best way to study plants necessarily, unless you have access to the plants next door. Maybe not pick one that's on the other side of the planet. unless you want to study their dead flattened carcasses on newspaper for the 5 to 6 years of your life and their genes. But I digress. So I don't know, is there anything else that we want to bring up for Next Gen or any?
I think we found our dry comedy host for the podcast series though.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Ryan, we didn't get to hear why you want to be a part. Why are you roped into the next generation?
Yeah, you all have cultivated an some sort of curiosity, I guess is the best way to describe it. Like, I mean, I guess as being, it's hard to call myself a scientist, but I am a scientist. So I've always had a natural curiosity for tons of things. So as soon as I kind of went off the deep end of rhododendron, this just kind of hooked me. So I have an interest in as Connor mentioned, just getting people to give a crap about about what I care about. And a lot of it goes hand in hand with just conserving wild spaces. And rhododendron lives in a lot of really beautiful wild spaces and does really amazing things. So I'm always interested in kind of the secret life of what goes on with critters and plants when nobody's watching, right? When seemingly nobody's watching. So why are things being created that look different, or what we call speciation? And what are their genomes doing? And why are they doing those things with their genome? What are the impacts of that? How are they adapting to living on high mountaintops? Or why can some plants live in gardens and other ones can't? You know, those types of things interest me. And I think they're really important for filling in the gaps of our knowledge in natural history. We need to know those things to be able to make choices for policy, or to really understand what the future looks like for the next gen rhododendron people, right? You know, what is that going to look like in 40 to 50 years when I'm on the other side trying to hand out or hand down what they need to do for the future to keep this going? So I really want to get involved in a way that I can get people interested in wanting to just get involved in some way, even if it was just learning a little bit about rhododendron and sharing it with their family members or friends or whatever, or taking a deep dive as far as, you know, maybe collecting rhododendrons and studying their genomes like I do. If you want to quote unquote be that crazy, then come on down. But I hope that I can generate that interest. And I don't know, honestly, what, like, a PhD is such a narrow focus that sometimes, you know, they talk about people in their PhD putting the blinders on for 5 or 6 years and just focusing on one thing, so needle point. And then when you're done, like, the entire world kind of opens up afterwards. So I have a little checklist of things that I would love to do with rhododendrons, but I don't think there's enough lifetimes for me to do it. So I hope that I can, you know, maybe one day have my own graduate students or undergraduates that want to do that work, and I can help mentor them through that. And they would fall in love with some of these plants too and want to conserve them or even grow them in their backyards, or maybe be a leader in American Rhododendron Society someday or something like that, or work in a botanical garden. You know, all those careers are amazing and will play their role in how rhododendron is seen in the future and the success of those programs. So that's my reason for being here.
The next gen, That's where it's at.
The next gen, yeah.
Yeah, helping that person that's coming up, whoever that person is and whatever stage they are versus you. I think that's really powerful.
Mm-hmm. I like to call it kind of the Steve Irwin approach, right? And I think Connor alluded to this too. It's like people can serve the things that they love. So if you don't, I think the best thing that Connor said was like, if you don't know about it, it doesn't exist, right? It's just like, you just can't. It just doesn't exist. So that's I feel like very called to action based. Even Connor inspired me with what he was talking about just a minute ago. So,
and I think also there's an important piece here too, that the younger generation, they have a different future to look forward to. A lot of them will never have gardens. Like, you know, we've all enjoyed a green beginning.
Work is my garden. I don't have a garden. I just have work.
Well, exactly. But, you know, that, you know, we live in these little cells in our condominiums, and you don't have access to plants. So one of the things that I think that the next gen strives to do is to bring plant interest to the younger generation without having your own garden. How do you do that? You know, how do you do that virtually? How do you meet the people who can lead you to those gardens? And this is what we're hoping for, that the ARS will provide mentorship and share their gardens, share the bounty of their gardens in whatever way is possible, in a safe way and in a very practical and useful way for the younger generation to enjoy.
Yeah. That would be really great. And it is going to be challenging in the future to, even in places, like especially in places where rhododendrons don't grow. I think, you know, the challenge of getting those plants to become a part of a garden that doesn't exist in the climate mm-hmm. where they exist is will also be important for some of these hybridization programs too. You know, mm-hmm. botanical gardens are not only a place for, you know, plants to show off and be pretty, but they are also a place for people to get educated about plants from all over the world. You know, just walking around a botanical garden can be like a tour of forests and jungles from all across the globe. You know, sometimes you have African plants, European plants, Asian plants, and rhododendron tends to be on almost all of those continents, sans Africa. But rhododendron itself is really a nice poster child for learning about different cultures. Like the people that are connected to rhododendron are thousands of years if you look at China. So it's just, there's just a lot of really great natural mm-hmm. history and human history all weaved into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are a few plants that are as versatile as rhododendron. You know, we see it in science, really complex science. We see it in climate change. We see it in art, in the manufacturing industry. We see it even in culinary ventures. It's everywhere. Yeah. And so, you know, there's a lot of possibilities for people who wish to get interested in rhododendron, which field to pursue.
Yeah, this is a kind of a rude side note, but you said rhododendron was everywhere. And I remember being on the mountainside in China, and the section Pogonanthum that looks unlike many rhododendrons, the tiny little reduced sexual parts and the small flowers, their leaves smell phenomenal. And my wife wanted to purchase like one of those oil diffusers or whatever, you know, they put out the little steam thing. So I was like, huh, I wonder if they have a rhododendron sense for these oils. And sure enough, they have a Pogonanthum one online that you can order. I haven't done it yet, but it exists. So Pogonanthum has been diffused and the oils have been extracted for filling your own home with the scents of rhododendron. So actually I should purchase that and let you know how that goes.
You do that.
They're also toxic, so I hope that doesn't work out.
We want a review.
Right. Survive the experience, I'll let you know.
And does it compare to the real thing?
I know. Hopefully.
It better not smell like a rose.
Right, look, just cherry blossoms. Swing and a miss. Well, I think if we have any concluding remarks for our first inaugural podcast episode, I guess, from anybody.
I'll have to think about that. Let's see. You know, I have something. I guess something that I was thinking about in regards to this idea of bringing the members of the American Rhododendron Society to the broader community, to the younger generation, to show them sort of the resources and the the ability that we have to sort of help them. I think one of the things that excites me about that so much is the ability to be mentored. I know myself that the reason that I'm here in this science career is that there have been people along the way who saw me and who said, hey, I see what you're doing over there. And they took it upon themselves to help. I really think that our community of the American Rhododendron Society, they are excited to help. They're helpful people. And I feel excited about this podcast. I feel excited about the ability to start connecting with a new audience and start connecting these great members of our community with new people who are looking for mentorship, who are looking for that person who's had a career or had, you know, these experiences to say, hey, you know, I see you there. I see you working. I see you learning. I see you trying. And here's how I can help you.
Yeah, I'd like to second that. I feel like I'm in the like fake it till you make it stage of my career. And I don't know if you ever really outgrow that. But I know that there's just this core group of people who are not just local to me, but are around the world. And I know that I can reach out to them. And I know that they'll, it's just a thing about these people that love plants. It's not a competition. People just want to share. And so there's just this group of people that if I have questions, I can ask them and they'll give me a great answer and they'll bear with me as I keep asking these annoying things that seems like I should know. But there's, yeah, the people are just so welcoming and open to including you into their circle so that you can share in that love for rhododendron that they have.
Well, I have a thought as well as a last thought. It has been said that once exposed to rhododendrons, you will be a captive forever.
Yeah, it's certainly becoming true in my case.
Yeah. It was true. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and once you learn what they look like, you'll see them everywhere. And it's just like, there's another one.
Can also confirm that too, yeah.
Thanks for listening to For the Love of Rhododendron with your hosts, Christina Woodward, Connor Ryan, Juliana Medeiros, and Ryan Fuller. We hope you enjoyed learning about the divergent paths we each took to discover our own passion for rhododendron. If you're keen to hear more, here's what's coming up in our next episode.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening today. We look forward to episode 2 of For the Love of Rhododendron, where Juliana and Ryan will be talking with Dr. Valerie Sosa. Valerie is a plant biologist who has worked on multiple plant groups. She worked in Ben Hall's lab at the University of Washington, where she was an author on the rhododendron Williams Seanum genome, which will be the focus of our conversation. How does whole genome sequencing work? Why is it important? What does this mean for rhododendron enthusiasts and scientists in the future? It promises to be a fun and enlightening conversation. So see you there.
Curious to learn more about the topics discussed in this episode? Visit our website at www.rhododendron.org. Here, you'll find tons of rhododendron resources, including tutorials, blogs, events, databases, and more. Click on the podcast link on the homepage to find more episodes, suggest a topic for a future episode, and get in-depth information about the people, places, and plants featured here. Until next time, keep carrying that torch for rhododendron, and don't forget to talk endlessly about this podcast to all your friends and family.